Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And the Media Project is underway. Welcome. Thank you for finding us, whether you've found us on the air or on the internet. I'm Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, and we're with Alan Shartok, the CEO and WAMC Northeast Public Radio, among other things. And joining us this week is Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady. Are we all ready to go? I want to ask you guys something. It's very important. If you don't want to tell me the truth, I'll understand. But did you both get your invitations to Vice President Biden's summer bash?
I did not. I didn't think he was giving one this year.
Judy, did you get it?
I didn't get it as well.
Well, good thing, because as Alan said, the annual beach party that Vice President Biden throws for journalists has been canceled, according to Politico. And I think that that's a Media Project subject, because even if it weren't canceled, should there be such a thing? And would you have gone if you were so invited?
Well, first of all, somehow Joe doesn't know that I'm alive, and so therefore I've never been invited to this. But I have grave concerns. I don't know about Judy, but I have grave concerns about some of the things that are done in order to buy goodwill.
Me as well. I think any of this fraternizing with politicians is a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea for the White House to have a Christmas party where they invite all the reporters. You shouldn't be that close, because it is a perk. And it does buy some sort of loyalty. I think reporters would say, no, no, it doesn't. We're still objective. But I think if you go to a party at the White House, if you get your picture taken with the president, it means something. And I don't think reporters or editors should be going to those things.
And I'm sorry, Ira, but when you think about it, quite frequently, just sort of leapfrogging on what Judy just said, quite frequently, people recruit reporters to be their PR people at sometimes double and triple the salary. We call that going over to the dark side from being a reporter. Now, where do you think they meet each other? At some of these fraternization events is when people get a sense of who and what. And by the way, we also see it in other places. We see some of these political dinners where they do a show. And then reporters are going out in some cases and selling tickets to their events to the politicians.
Right, who have to dip into their campaign funds to pay for these tickets,
and
oftentimes.
Just to put this so the listeners will understand, we're talking about people such as Wolf Blitzer, Candy Crowley, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, Bob Schieffer, Ann Compton. I mean, these are some of the heavyweights in the news business. And what are they doing? Is it just having hamburgers and chatting? The events there include super soaker fights, face painting, and a moon bounce. I mean, I've been accused personally of being a little tight sometimes, not loosening up a bit. I'm sorry to say, I don't play the banjo, you know, but I just can't even imagine.
That was a shot, folks, in case you didn't catch it, because I do.
I think that's great, but gosh, can you imagine going to an event like this and some of the most seemingly respected people in the country in this setting? It just boggles the mind, in my opinion.
Well, let me try to take their side for a moment, okay? Their side would be, how do you think we get our leads? When we talk to these people, we go, and that's the good reason for doing it. And that way we get some information. But what I want to know is, why did Joe Biden cancel it this year? Was he angry at the press?
Well, it's suggested that it may be because of the sequester, and that the government has shut down various things, and it would be awfully bad if it looked like it had spent any kind of money on this kind of event. And by the way, just to point out, this is not just a Joe Biden event. Politico reports that Vice President Gore used to throw a Halloween party for journalists.
Well, I think that's appropriate in his case.
And what about Dick Cheney, who invited, well, they invited journalists to cocktail parties, so that was a little bit more restrained.
Yeah, we want to save money. We certainly don't want to save money on a multi-billion dollar submarine that we may not need.
You know, I would love to have known how much this summer beach party costs taxpayers every year, or how much those Halloween parties.
Well, they saved money by not inviting me, because I would not be the super soaker, but I would be looking for the hot dog stand.
I was going to say you'd probably eat a lot.
Yeah, I would take up that part of the party. Well, anyway, the good news, I think we'll all agree, fiscally and otherwise, is that it has been canceled for at least this summer. We've talked before on this program, and I thought a column in the New York Times by Frank Bruni really capsulized the issue of whether or not politicians are now finding ways to go around the press. And by that, I mean, in the instances that he cites, the recent announcement by Congresswoman Bachman that she would not seek re-election came through a video that she produced and posted online. When Anthony Weiner announced that he was running for the mayoralty of New York, he posted a video online.
Yeah, he wants to avoid the press. Why in the world, I just want to jump in and say, why in the world would Anthony Weiner, who has been treated so well, that's sardonic, mm-hmm. And sarcastic by the New York POST and the Daily News, making all those jokes about his last name, why in the world would he try to get around them?
All right, well, what about Hillary Clinton, who has generally been favorably covered? When she announced her endorsement of gay marriage, she did it on a prepackaged video posted online.
Well, because she had a little problem. And her little problem was that Don't Ask, Don't Tell came from her husband, Bill, you know, who is one of her greatest supporters. So rather than stand there and have some reporter say to you, well, then did you change your mind? Do it this way.
Okay, so therein is the issue, that they are managing to get around reporters by producing videos to release information on their own, sidestepping us from the questions that you suggest are going to be asked. And so the question for us as journalists is not so much, do we think this is a good idea, because I'm sure we all would rather have a shot at the questioners, but what do you think about the broader implication of this trend? And it's a trend that seemingly is only going to get greater as people pick up on these kinds of ways.
I wonder what Judy thinks.
You know, as a journalist, I'm not that threatened by this, because it's just like a press release, except it's a video press release. And news reporters will take that and develop their sources and develop a broader story. It's an issue, though, for the consumer, because if they just limit their recognition of the news to that video, then they've lost all that context. Sources have been doing this for quite a bit of time now, and it's widely dispersed through digital world, of course, but I think of it just as a press release.
Ira, you know, you can be so condescending and presumptuous about the entitlements of the press. I want to know something from you, sir. If you were in their spot, wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, but then I would like to think that I would leave myself open for questions. I think Judy's analogy is a good one.
You know, I've been dealing with politicians for a long time, and they always say, when you ask them a question like that, you say, okay, if you win, are you going to behave differently than they're behaving? And you know what they always say? Always? I'd like to think so.
Well, so
but they don't.
Is the public well served by this? What is the greater impact of this, if any?
When there's somebody from the New York POST gets up there and starts making wiener jokes about, you know, his private parts, why in the world would anybody subject themselves to that?
You know, this column by Frank Bruni was really well written, and it raised a lot of interesting issues. Also, one of the issues is that the reporters also have a bad reputation because of how they treat the politicians and how they ask the questions. But reporters are asking these questions. questions because they're not getting straight answers from politicians so often.
Not always. Sometimes they're asking those questions just because they're jerks.
Well, Bruni acknowledges what Judy just points out, that the reporters, to a certain extent, have brought this upon themselves, and that the public, by and large, now does not see favorably of us. But as he says, we must be able to poke and meddle. It may not be a pretty sight, and we journalists may not be doing it in a pretty way. But eliminate that and you wind up with something even less pretty. Bachman, robotically composed, telling you that she's quitting for purely high-minded reasons, with the vigor of the Republic foremost in her heart. That's a lot further from the truth than anything we wretched scribes would put out.
Well, but that's an opinion.
Well, sure. Well,
I have an opinion, by the way, which I happen to agree with.
You agree with, yeah.
You know, I think any average person watching that Michelle Bachman video would know that this is a highly
choreographed
speech, and they'll take it what it was.
Well, I'll tell you something there, and I'm not the first to point this out, but her departure from the Congress is going to cost people jobs because there are fact checkers all around the country now who are not going to have anything to do.
That's funny.
And she also is hurting the editorial cartoonists of the world. So
yeah, well, you know, I just think there's enough blame to go around here. We want good journalism, but then when you take a look at the tabloids and how they go after certain people because they're owned by people who have a grudge, then I think you have to say we don't like that either.
Well, you know, in defense of reporters, maybe tabloids aside, reporters ask questions 10 different ways because they don't get an answer the right way, or they don't get a good answer the first time. So you're asking it 10 different ways to Sunday so they can get a straight answer. That's one of the things when, if you watch a press conference, people get annoyed at reporters because they do this so often, but there's a reason they're doing it.
Don't you think that the press conferences being televised has hurt newspaper or broadcast interviewers because it's taken viewers behind the curtain and see the way these things are portrayed? In other words, you'll watch a press conference. I always relate things to sports. Some of the questions that are asked are just so innocuous, at least in the public press conferences, because most of the time the real answers are only going to be given and the real questions asked when you're off to the side. But people are
And there's a reason for that, right, Ira, which is that the reporter doesn't want to ask their good question in front of everybody else.
Sure,
and the best reporters do that.
So what the public is witnessing is just show, and we've become part of the show, and trained politicians at the highest level are able to handle these things very well, although Michelle Bachman perhaps not being the best example of that. So let's switch gears a little bit. This is the Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Chartok and Judy Patrick. I wanted to ask a question of Judy because it doesn't apply to WAMC or radio, but do you still have a photography staff at the Schenectady Gazette?
You know, I can't imagine not having a photography staff. This was the Chicago Sun-Times.
Chicago Sun-Times has laid off all of its photographers.
Now, are they in trouble fiscally?
All newspapers are in trouble.
But are they in particular trouble?
I don't know. A Tribune Company is considerably more so in Chicago than them, but the Tribune Company is the larger of the two papers, so I would think Sun-Times has got problems.
Okay, so here you are. You're the big boss. You know, Judy or Ira, you've both been big bosses in your papers. And the publisher or the business guy comes in and he says, hey, you're spending too much money. You have to fire some people. So then you have to decide who you're going to fire. Now, let me just speak try to make up a devil's advocate argument, which I may or may not believe in. You know, you take a look at your entire staff. You have a bunch of reporters. You have a bunch of photographers. You say, wait a second now. My reporters can be given a camera, and they can be told to take pictures. But my photographers can't be given a notebook and said, you better do the story.
Well, that is exactly the issue.
Thank you.
Judy, how many photographers do you have?
I have four.
You have four, and do your reporters take pictures too?
Oh, yeah. They take photographs, and we use them in the paper, but they don't take great photographs. Mm-hmm. They don't take good photos.
Well, we're a smaller paper than Judy's. We used to have, at our peak, I believe, 2.5 photographers, 2 full-time and a half-time photographer.
What does half a person look like?
A short person. That's just listening to the 2,000-year-old man. We used to call him Bernie. We have 2.5 photographers. We now only have 1 full-time photographer, and to Judy's point and Alan's point, journalists now are expected to carry cell phones and carry video equipment and all the rest, and that is how these pictures are coming to us, in addition to crowdsourcing, that is to say, photos that are coming in from the outside. And 2 points about it. One is, it certainly is not as good as having a professional photojournalist. I don't think there's anybody who could make the argument. On the other hand, it has become fiscally more difficult to cost justify in these times that kind of position, particularly when young journalists, I think Judy would know from interviewing and hiring young journalists, when they're coming out of journalism school now, they're not reporters, photographers, videographers. They're now journalists, multimedia journalists, and they can do all of these things. So there is a way, it seems to me, a difficult way to have it both ways. We still can get pictures in the paper, and we're saving some money. And that's what the Sun-Times, no doubt, is doing.
Well, you know, the Berkshire Eagle, there's a guy they have over there. It's a paper I write for, I just should say, on Saturdays. And they have a guy named Ben Garver, who is superb. I mean, the guy is superb. He'll find an eagle sitting somewhere or something that you just won't see anywhere. He knows which lenses to use and what to do. And so that paper, I think one picture is worth a thousand words, and I think that paper knows that he should be kept because people read the paper because of him.
You know, and the reporters at our paper do a really good job of taking photos of buildings or things that don't move very quickly, but we send the photographers out to sports assignments, to fires, to things where you really need some expertise to capture it. Also, if you really want something you're going to play well on a cover, you want a photographer to shoot it.
Well, it certainly makes the life of a reporter more difficult than it was, and it was always difficult. If the reporter is shooting, as are ours and as are many newspapers now, they're going to a meeting, they're tweeting what's going on at the meeting, they're trying to take notes so that they can write a story first for the internet and then for print. And at the same time, they're shooting videos. Perhaps it's the Vine video for 6 seconds or the Tout video for 45 seconds or a long form video. And then they're going back and writing a story. I mean, there's just so many things that they're juggling at the same time.
Right. And the smart photographers out there are starting to tweet the news as well. And they're starting to do some writing. So you're seeing them expand their horizons.
Well, I do predict that there's going to be more of what we see at the Sun-Times and at the Daily Freeman and other papers in our company. And I don't have any inside information, Alan, but the Berkshire Eagle is part of the greater company that I belong to. Mm-hmm. And this is the trend. We're trying to figure out a way to be more efficient.
That would be terrible if they got rid of a guy who brings readers to look at that paper. But okay, but let me just say, I just heard you say something, Ira, which I found fascinating. You know,
for the first time in all the time I've been doing in this program, you found something I said that was fascinating.
No, I have great respect for you, Ira.
Okay.
I think that's really terribly unfair of you. But I wanted to say that you said something that was really sort of profound that people may not understand, which needs a little amplification. And that is that these reporters are writing both for immediacy in terms of the web, as well as writing for the newspaper, the print edition of the newspaper. Now, I read the New York Times all night long. You know, I get up, I read the Times, I go back to sleep. But I know that things that may show up at 12:30 at night or at 11 o'clock at night are not going to be what the Times looks like, because my wife loves to hold the Times. And so we'll go and we'll sit over coffee. And the stuff that is on the front page of the Times is old news or cold potatoes compared to what you're reading on the web. Can either of you talk about that?
The news isn't static anymore. It's changing every minute. It's like catching a moonbeam in your hand.
But does anybody, Judy, ever complain about that and say, wait a second now, you know, I'm reading the Times, but I read this other story last night.
Well, in a certain respect, it is as old as the newspaper business, and I'll try to explain why briefly. When in the old days, when we had none of the bells and whistles we had now, but when newspapers, particularly large newspapers, printed multiple editions, there would be a story in the first edition that very likely could change for the second edition and the third edition. Similarly, what we're asking reporters to do now is, in effect, be wire service reporters. I mean, the Associated Press and UPI, for years, they'd put out the first bulletin, and they would put what we call the first lead, and then the second lead right through, on and on and on, until finally there was a final story. So now our reporters are doing the same thing because, I'm glad I'm not a reporter. It's become so much more complex, because I was following one of our reporters was tweeting from a meeting in Kingston recently. And so she was literally giving a play-by-play. This is, he's coming up to speak. So she's got to type that
in. Now, is that on there, on your website?
It's on our website. It's on our Twitter feed. It's on her Twitter feed. So she's got to stop and type that. She's constantly stopping and typing. At the same time, she's got to get a broader sense of what the meeting is all about and try to put it in some kind of context for her longer and more comprehensive story. But the advantage that this is presenting newspapers is it's giving us an immediacy that we never had before.
Yeah, real immediacy.
Real immediacy. Yeah. It also lends itself to mistakes. You know, I think we've talked about it on this program, how in broadcast, if there the recent Boston bombings and how much incorrect information got on CNN, to be specific, because, again, the old cliche, we were watching sausage being made. We, in the past, a lot of these false pieces of information would come through newspaper desks and would not get published because we were on a publishing cycle that was 12, 14 hours away. That said, there's nothing to say that what was finally published was also not incorrect, because you publish what you know up until a certain point in time when the clock said its deadline, let's use what you've got.
Right. So in the old days, we might have had 4 or 5 editions, and now we kind of have 1,000 editions a day.
Now, speaking
of... You know, in the old days, you had 4 or 5 editions.
Yeah.
Then you had 1 edition.
Right.
Now you have 1,000.
Now you have some newspapers that don't have 1 edition a day anymore. They're down to 3 days a week. And all of this ties into something that I sort of get a kick out of, and that is the use of the words breaking news. Do you use that in
You know what? When radio has breaking news, my definition of that is something that hasn't been in the newspaper already.
Well, breaking news, we've all seen it. We see it on the scroll, on TV screens. I know my website, when there is a hot story that we're posting for the first time, we'll put it as breaking news. But there are other places I can think of immediately, the Today Show, where almost every morning they will report as breaking news something that happened 12 hours ago and list it as breaking news. The Fox affiliate in Louisville, Kentucky, has promised it is going to stop using the term breaking news because it's really just, he says it's used too frequently, and it's a marketing ploy to convince you that a television station is better at bringing you the news first. Everybody wants to say breaking
news. So what's new?
So what's new? I mean, the newspaper business, and it's still used, although not as often, the word exclusive would be used. Now, that all said, NBC, or rather MSNBC, which has been climbing in the ratings to a position of number 2 behind Fox News, is slipped dramatically in recent months because, by their own admission, MSNBC has marketed itself as the place for politics and not the place for breaking news, and in fact admits that it doesn't do breaking news very well.
So when the Boston bombing comes, they go down.
You have the tornadoes.
Yeah, they go down.
Everybody goes to Fox, and so.
But when there's an election coming, maybe they go up.
Well, there's also the suggestion that the recent issues regarding the Obama administration, which has not made the Obama administration, and that's MSNBC's core supporters, has been not terribly favorable, and that people are shying away now. They don't want to hear about that anymore, so they're not going to MSNBC.
Well, I think that's right. I think people decide if the news is on their side and they perceive the place, the station, as the place they're going to get the kind of information they want, they go there. I've always felt, by the way, that Fox attracts the right-wingers. I'm not telling anything you haven't heard before. That MSNBC always attracted the left. And that CNN always attracted the third, was always lower, until something incredibly important happened, the Boston bombing or one of those things, or a war in Iraq.
But I think Fox does breaking news better than MSNBC.
Do you?
Yeah, they do.
Breaking news.
I never watch it, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing here is that MSNBC, their profit's up. So their ratings may be down, and we'll see what happens this year. But, I mean, they're making money.
Well, which follows which? In other words, does it follow that when you're making money, it comes because you're getting more listeners, or does it follow that you make the money first and then you get? I wonder.
Well, we're going to have to see if there's a sea change, because CNN, which used to be the leader before the liberal and conservative wings changed the programming of the other two networks, CNN is remaking itself. Jeff Zucker, who was the big honcho at NBC for a long time, is changing things
up. What's he doing?
He's got Chris Cuomo as the new morning host with a young woman whose name I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And he's got Anthony Bourdain, who is now doing a program that's essentially the same program he was doing on the Travel Channel, and that's now on CNN. So he's attempting to change the mix.
In all respect to Chris Cuomo and to his brother and all the rest of it, that doesn't sound terribly different. In other words, you can bring a guy in who comes in and maybe taller, maybe have better jowls, I don't know. But why in the world would that change the kinds of things we've been talking about here, which is that right-wingers go to Fox, left-wingers go to MSNBC. Why would a Chris Cuomo bring more people in?
What from what I've seen, MSNBC is trying to develop shows that people will go to, not just to turn it on to see what's on MSNBC.
Yeah, and some of the guys they choose are not that good.
But here's one, the one final piece to this is, yeah. I noticed the other day that MSNBC was promoting coverage of the George Zimmerman trial. This is the murder trial, the Trayvon Martin. They were promoting that coverage for MSNBC, so it looks like they're now trying to get back into the breaking news business. And that's where we're going to have to leave it for this week. Thank you for listening to The Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok, and we hope we'll hear from you and see you again next week.
Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers.